Welcome back to the programme. I did tell you we're going to be talking about whiskey, and thankfully it is after 5 o'clock, so we can get as thirsty as we like. A collection of long-lost Irish whiskey recipes unearthed by a historian has been revived for the first time in almost a century. Now, the first casks have been produced, some made using ingredients or mash bills, that's an interesting word, which dates back to about the 1800s. The recipes were unearthed and brought back to life by leading whisky historian Fionnán O'Connor, who wrote a thesis on the lost distilling process. And he joins us on the phone right now. Thankfully, we got you at a sober moment, Fionnán. How are you?
Well, that's what you think.
Yeah, indeed.
Oh, I'm grand. I'm stronger than coffee. Yeah,
good.
We have a deadline.
Anyway, good to talk to you. Tell me what a whisky historian is, please.
Well, there's not a whole lot of reference because there's not many of them. I used to work as a whisky writer or a critic. I still do. When I was at school, I was on track to become an academic. And then suddenly there was a bolt of, you know, high strength inspiration. I thought, well, maybe I can pool these two together. And no one will ever fund the history of whiskey. And then suddenly, yeah, there was interest.
Right.
So
when you decided
making
then,
it up as we go along,
when you decided that you wanted to be a whiskey historian, where did you start?
Well, I mean, that was it. You know, I had already a book under the belt by then on Irish whiskey, or on Irish pot still whiskey specifically.
Okay.
And there was a big section of the book that was the history. So there was a lot of stuff there. And then I was used to trucking through archives and whatnot. Originally, I did medieval lit, so I was used to putting on gloves and things. The inspiration came. I was in Hong Kong on an Irish food diplomacy mission with Bord Bia. And I was there on behalf of Irish drink. And I think my job was really just to get people sloshed so that they'd sign all the Bord Bia contracts for, you know, shellfish and whatever. Anyway, one of the chefs there said he's a food historian. He's now my thesis advisor, Martin Muckenumra. And he said, well, look, we could probably get you some funding. Because I was talking to him about the history of Irish whiskey and about the collapse and the kind of recent revival. And a lot of people know that history about Ireland having loads of distilleries and them all closing down. But they don't know that all these distilleries were making different liquids, that these tasted very different to each other, as well as wildly different in some cases to what we call Irish whiskey now.
Explain to me first the word mash bill, if you would. Is this a different word for ingredients?
Yeah, essentially. So all whiskey, whether it's bourbon or Irish or rye or whatever, is distilled from grains. And a mash bill just means what grains did you use in what percentage, what proportion.
Okay.
So bourbon is legally defined as majority corn mash bill. As long as you're over 51%, you can do what you like.
Okay.
So, you know, they all revolve around these concepts. So yeah, it's just a grain cocktail, essentially.
Now, anybody that knows me knows that I love a little drop of whiskey, or maybe a little bit more than a little drop of whiskey that might be good for me. And so there would be a very distinct taste between the Irish whiskey, bourbon would be American whiskey, we would consider it as, and then you've got the Scotch whiskey. What's different between the Irish whiskey and the Scotch whiskey that gives the different taste?
Well, this is it. There's overlap as well. There's Irish whiskey that tastes quite like Scotch whiskey, and there's Scotch whiskeys that taste more like. So in principle, you know, Scotland, you know, is famous for single malt whiskey, which also exists in Ireland. But single malt whiskey is a very straightforward mash. It's malted barley. You take barley, you drown it, you dry it, it opens up, it germinates, and then you run with it.
Okay.
A lot of Irish whiskey is based on what's called Irish pot still or single pot still, where they mix malt and raw gristed barley together. And raw gristed barley is useless for making alcohol, but it makes a very oily mash, and it makes a very thick drink. So if you ever had like Red Breast or Green Spot, some of the kind of traditional Irish whiskies, they're very mouth filling, they're very, you know, viscous. And so that's coming from the mash bill. Scotch doesn't have that. That's a uniquely Irish trait. And depending on whether you mix, say if it's 50-50% malt raw barley, or 60-40 or 40-60, that's what Irish mash bills look like at present.
Okay.
But it used to be a lot more complicated, where it would be malt, raw barley, grist, and maybe, you know, a sprinkling of oats to give it a bang, as it were, you know, or wheat or rye or all three in various proportions. So it's been simplified as the industry collapsed.
Okay. Now, these mash bills, as you call them, that have been discovered, where did you find them?
it's been a kind of a hit and run job. A lot of distilleries didn't leave many records behind them, and what tended to be left were tax records. But you do find a few of them were given to the state. Lock's Distillery, when it closed down, was given to the National Library. The Cumber Distillery up north is in the Belfast Public Records Office. Okay. There's a lot of small things hanging around. There were court cases, but also the excise were great because the excise didn't give a damn about your secret recipe. They just wanted to know what you were doing so they could tax you.
Okay.
That was a big gold mine. And it's, you know, as dry as reading sand to go through this stuff. But, you know, you get surveys as well. But then you get a few gems of old distillery cookbooks, as it were.
Okay. And do you have to go digging for those? Are they easily accessible? As you say, some were given to the state, so you know where they were. But other ones, do you have to go to maybe descendants of people that were involved in breweries, or how did they come about?
With some of them, they were kind of finds, as it were. And some of them were remarkably easy. You know, it takes 5 minutes to get a National Archive membership. You know, there's nothing special about me. I just went and sat there long enough going through the catalogue. When you know the folder, you can walk and say, I want folder 42-B3, whatever. Yeah. And it's open there, and I've tried to keep it as open as possible.
Okay.
With distillers, as much as anyone, saying, look, these are the files, you're curious, go check it out, you know.
Okay.
I don't have any.
And was it a process then of you just transcribing these and building up a collection of recipes that said, right, okay, we have X number, let's have a look at this now?
Yeah, I have a running list on my laptop of mash bills. Now, a lot of them are very close together, and then there's some that are, you know, very far apart. So from different historical periods, you know, people tended to do things.
Okay.
A question also of looking at the kind of timeline trends, you know, when oak goes up over the 1800s, a wheat comes down and so forth. That's part of it too.
Okay. How different is the making of whiskey today, leaving aside maybe technology that might be employed, than it was in the 1800s?
Again, technology is a big one. But pot still distillation, the stuff that malt whiskey and single pot still are made of, hasn't really changed. It's gotten more efficient. You know, you're not lighting them with fire anymore, coal. You're using copper coiling, but it's the same principle, which is that, you know, you put in a mash, a kind of an ale, an unhopped beery substance, and you light a fire under it, or you heat it, and you heat it high enough to boil alcohol, but not high enough to boil water. And the alcohol essentially gets ripped out of the ale, evaporates, and then it recondenses into spirit. But you also have all the kind of flavor compounds from the grains, and they all boil off and recondense in various ways. So we can be more exact about it.
Okay.
Now, you know, it was a bit more rough and ready at the time. So precision is the big difference, really.
You've managed to get, Bowen Distillery in County Meath involved in this. So when did that process start?
Years ago at a pub with Michael Walsh, their distiller, I suppose. You know, the head distiller for Bowen is an old friend. So,
okay.
You know, he twisted the arm, and then Matt Healy, who works with their logistics, is also a good friend. So between the two of them, and then I knew them already, so it, you know, it happened remarkably with remarkable ease.
Right, okay. And so what's the process? What are they doing right now? What's happening?
Part of the thesis has always been the idea that we'll recreate these mash bills in controlled settings. So everything else has to be the same except the mash bill. You know, the distillery has to be the same, blah, blah, blah. And cut points and all the kind of technical stuff has to be the same. But we'll create a series of them, and then they're given to a blind panel of distillers and blenders from around Ireland. There's 30 people invited, and they all have to be in flavor creating roles. And they go through, it's a rigorous all-day affair, nosing, writing, and then the results are made available to everyone. But there'll be this sensory setup, and we've chosen mash bills that kind of answer questions. You know, they haven't been picked at random. So some of them are quite close together and some of them quite far apart.
Okay.
And then the samples will be sent off to a lab for a, you know, GCMS analysis. And those findings will be kind of put side by side with the sensory findings to see if we can make deductions about what happens when you bump up wheat or, you know, tone down rough.
All right. So you try and break it down. And where does the consumer, i.e. me, where do I come into all of this?
Well, there's a back door to the warehouse. It's easily accessible.
What's the code?
A reliable crowbar. the hope is so, and again, Bowen have made the stuff and the liquid belongs to them, but the information is for everybody. All this is given out freely. And so the hope is all these distillers and vendors and people who come will be inspired to do things themselves, and that this will all end up into the bloodstream. So Bowen are currently selling off the large majority of the barrels, which is great, to whiskey clubs and pubs and so forth, so that it gets out there. So obviously we'll have to wait for a while for it to age, you know, it needs to mature into whiskey, but it will be public in that sense.
Okay. Now, I read that only 144 casks are being made available to the public. So how much drink is that basically?
That's quite a bit of drink. You know, your average cask is about 200 to 250 litres.
Okay.
Now, alcohol evaporates over time. It's called the angel share. It goes down.
That's why a bottle never lasts long in this house.
I know. And it's abducted. But your average barrel, you know, 120 barrels or 120 bottles, say, to 140, that kind of range.
Okay.
But again, it depends on the type of barrel and the type of, you know.
And can members of the public buy these, or are these only for other distillers?
No. In fact, the whole drive is to make it members of the public, because the more public it is, the less to do with a brand it is, you
okay.
know, the more. So it's kind of being given by Bourne out into the system. So a few whiskey clubs or interests, you know, there's nothing stopping a brand from coming in. But again, it's open, and the large majority are essentially individual punters.
How important is this discovery and this development in the world of whiskey overall, generally?
Oh, you know, tremendously important. I can't overstate it. No, it's been a joy. And, you know, I think Irish whiskey has a strange relationship with mash bills, because they all disappeared. You know, in America, bourbon mash bills are part of the logic, you know, high rye bourbon or genuine rye whiskey or
okay.
low rye bourbon or wheated bourbon. Whereas Irish whiskey is either malt or pot still, you know, they're either straight malt or mixed malt and raw barley. And that's starting to change. And you see new distillers kind of kicking about with stuff, but nothing systematically done with a kind of a method.
Okay.
And the fact that this is there's been a huge amount of response and love from the industry. So the hope is that this changes the way a lot of distillers approach, you know, what they're doing, you know, and that can only happen if they decide to run with it. If they
okay.
come in and leave it behind them the next day, then it's not important. If they take it back, then it is, you know.
Talk to me about your thesis. What is it? And it's about whiskey, but talk to me about it.
Yeah. So the thesis itself, you know, this is all the fun bit. A lot of the thesis is quite dry.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the evolution of mash bills over time, about industrial history, about why things happened, why, for example, wheat used to be a huge part of the mash bill and then it disappears as the 1800s go on. You know, there's a certain seminal event in the middle mm-hmm. there that has a strong effect on that. You know, so all these, it's not just people have recipes in their minds and come up with them. There's outside forces, you know, taxes, agriculture. When people start importing grain, they start using essentially a cheaper mash bill because imported grain becomes cheap, so you can use things like maize.
Mm-hmm.
So all these factors and the collapse of the industry and trying to work out the logic of why people did all this stuff. So the technical thesis question is, what were the guiding imperatives in the trajectory of Irish whiskey mash bills from 1760 to 1974, and how can the specifically gastronomic aspects of these mash bills drive innovation in contemporary Irish distilling? And 1760 is when it became obligatory to register a distillery.
Right. And
1974 is when the last of the old ones died off.
Incredible. All righty. Well, listen, it sounds fascinating. Do you get to sample all of these as well?
Oh, my God. I spent the month like propped up. They gave me the excise officer's office when I was there. So I showed up every day and I was supposed to, you know, see what's going on mm-hmm. and log the results and blah, blah, blah. But I was just propped up with lots of high strength alcohol. And, you know, I was supposed to log with Michael, the distiller, the progress. And, you know, part of the log was nosing things back and forth and tasting, well, what do you think happens when we do this or that? And, you know, I'm sure Michael had a delightful time, you know, just dropping in. He'd drop it and say, you know, do you think it's time for a log today?
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Yeah. Well, more like it's 8, you know, 9 o'clock, you know, so it was a lot of fun.
Good.
I'll put it that way. So I have an intimate relationship with the mash bills at this point. I know them all back to front.
Have you a favorite whiskey?
In general, that's a hard one. I certainly have a thing for Irish pot still, because that was, you know, the first love. Love. I don't just drink Irish. I drink, you know, I love Islay Scotch. I love American rye whiskey. I think the oldest love would be Redbreast, which I think is a love shared with a lot of Irish whiskey traditionalists. Mm-hmm. But now it's so exciting. There's so much going on in Ireland. It's very difficult to pick favourites. You know, it used to be relatively easy.
Well, I wish you a long and happy life. I hope you remember. I hope you remember most of your formative years. And thanks a million for talking to us today. And a great find. And I'm looking forward to having those whiskies available to us at some point when we can taste at least one or two of them. Fiona O'Connor, thanks ever so much. Continued success with your thesis and the history of whiskey. And I know that there's plenty listening that would envy, absolutely envy, what you do on a daily basis. So thanks for talking to us.
Thank you very much, Jeff.